everybody, and welcome to Grim Scenarios. I'm your host, Milk, here with your other host, Emma. And oh boy, we are continuing on with the tier list townsfolk project. How's it going, Emma?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, doing pretty good. Just got back from a short trip to Atlanta, one of my favorite cities to visit because the food is amazing, and as everyone knows, I'm a big fan of traveling to places and eating their food. So it was a good time. Had a great old time.
Yeah.
What do you got going on? Anything interesting this week?
Nothing particularly special.
All right. Well, you've got this wonderful podcast to record. So that's something.
I suppose.
We can enjoy each other's company for about an hour.
Yeah. So we're going to be covering about half the experimental townsfolk today. Essentially A through G. We're going to skip one in that category. That's Choir Boy. We're going to pick up Choir Boy next week when we do H through V. Just because Choir Boy and King are so linked together, we thought it made more sense to move Choir Boy till the King discussion. So, once again, this is what we're doing. We're talking about how much strategic depth these characters have. This isn't how fun they are to play, how powerful they are. It's how much interesting ways can you think about your strategy when you're playing these characters. So we'll just kick it off. We're going to start with the Acrobat. The Acrobat's ability is relatively new. This is a character that's existed in some form or another for a long time publicly. But it used to be an outsider. And now its ability is each night asterisk, choose a player. If they are or become drunk or poisoned tonight, you die.
It's another interesting one. Because it does have quite a few of the elements of strategic kind of choice and pushing your luck that we've ranked very highly in other characters.
Yeah, and it's a very unique role. It's currently the only character in Clock Tower that does something similar to it, which is detect droisoning directly. There's some characters that indirectly check for droisoning, like Mathematician. But the Acrobat is the first and thus far only character that sort of fundamentally can tell you whether someone is droisoned or not, but it can only do it once per game. So, well, it can tell you people aren't droisoned as many times as possible, but it can only find one droisoning, because if it finds the droisoning, it dies and no longer gets to hunt.
So I think something I was just going to interject really quickly is I do think that with a lot of the experimentals, because we've just come out of talking about three sets of townsfolk that really come together as packages on scripts. And mm-hmm. with these experimentals, I think there's going to be a lot more caveats of where they're going to be more script dependent. They're going to be more dependent on the things that they interact with. An acrobat on a script with lots of droisoning is just going to die very quickly. An acrobat on a script with very little droisoning is not going to die very, very often. And so because these don't necessarily have home scripts yet, sometimes it's hard to think about the strategic value of one of these characters in a sort of vacuum.
Yeah. So I think with that in mind, like, the Acrobat essentially has sort of two options it can be going for. One is it can be trying to die, and one is it can be trying to live. And part of that is going to depend on whether poisoning is sort of static or mobile on the script. Like, for example, if it's a poisoner script, the Acrobat's relatively weaker, because checking someone one night doesn't mean anything for another night. Whereas if the poisoning is more static, like, you know, VI Drunkenness or Puzzle Masters or Leeches or Nodashis or Sweethearts, those sorts of things, the Acrobat is stronger because once it finds a poisoning, that poisoning is probably there the entire game.
Something else it can do is, although it's not as interactive, it can park on a single player and make sure that that one player is not droisened for several days.
And I was going to say something similar, because I think especially on like sort of roving poisoning scripts, that can be particularly useful, because like say you find like a fortune teller, you can park in that fortune teller and you can learn if the fortune teller has bad information due to droisoning.
I think it also shares some need for there to be multi-kill capability on its scripts. To hide that it tracks it. So if there's not, you know, a lot of multi-kill options, the information it gets is going to feel stronger. And if there's more multi-kill options, the information it gets is going to feel weaker. But I don't think that the possibility of getting killed in a multi-kill necessarily affects Acrobat's strategic choice, because you're still primarily going to be trying to pick people who are, you know, if a demon or an assassin or a godfather wants to kill you, they're just going to kill you. So you don't really need to make your choices around that so much as you continue to sort of choose in the same way. But I think it's worth mentioning.
I mean, it's similar to a gambler in that sense, where like the gambler can't, on a well-bit gambler script, the gambler shouldn't be to prove that they died to their own ability, but they can prove they didn't die to their own ability. And like, it's similar for the acrobat. If the acrobat picks the fortune teller three nights in a row and then dies on the fourth night in a multi-kill night, like, okay, so you don't know if you were got by the assassin or got because the poisoner finally found the fortune teller on that fourth night.
Right.
But you do know in those first three nights the poisoner didn't find the fortune teller, which is very strong information.
Yeah. I think in its wheelhouse, the acrobat has quite a lot of interesting choices to make, and it does have something of a push your luck element in a sort of way that feels a little bit like Snake Charmer. It's not as strong as Snake Charmer, but it sort of feels a little like Snake Charmer.
You know, it's very similar to Gambler.
I think
Gambler is the comparison character, and I think it goes with Gambler and S tier. Now, this isn't to say Acrobat should start showing up on scripts. In fact, the opposite. The Acrobat should largely stay off scripts. Our friends Navian and Alejo did a script-building tier list, and they've been revisiting it now that experimental releases are mostly over for the time being. It looks like in the printed version of the experimental set, there might be a few more surprises left. But now that these are mostly done, like, they were revisiting. And one thing they noted was, like, the Acrobat doesn't really change from a script-building perspective. It's still incredibly hard to find the right script for the Acrobat. But should you find that script, I think the Acrobat has a lot of interesting things to do.
Yeah, I think it's going in S tier.
Next up is the Alchemist. And the Alchemist is going to be... we have... Our next four characters are coming up alphabetically. Three of them are going to be incredibly hard to sort of talk about. And then the... One of them is also here, and so we'll just start with Alchemist. The Alchemist is almost sort of like, it almost needs like an NA role, because the Alchemist's strategic value is wholly dependent on what sort of minion it draws. That's because the Alchemist's ability is, you have a minion ability, when using this, the storyteller may prompt you to choose differently. So, the Alchemist, unlike, say, the Philosopher, which is another gain of a different ability character that we ranked quite highly by default, the Alchemist has no choice in what ability it's gaining. The storyteller dictates that to them. And how it, like, its strategic depth is, like, sort of built entirely along on how it can use that ability to help the good team, which, you know, is different for different minions. The strategic value of a, you know, Alchemist, DA or an assassin is going to be very different from the strategic value of an Alchemist mastermind.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how we would rate the character as a whole, but maybe we could talk about some of the more and less, maybe we could sort of give an example of some of the more and less strategic sort of choices, the more or less, the minions that sort of create more or less strategic choice when they are a good character.
Yeah, we can certainly talk about that, but I think what we do need to do here is add a new road to our tier list called NA, and that's going to be where the Alchemist has to go. The Alchemist has no inherent strategic value that can be placed anywhere.
That seems
right. So it just sort of needs to go outside this tier list on a sort of not applicable level.
Yeah, I suppose we could go through every combination of Alchemist and Minion, but that feels tedious, and we're certainly not going to do that.
Yeah, you know, obviously there's Minion abilities that, if you're not careful with, you're going to hurt the good team. Witch, Psychopath, the killing ones in particular. Serenovus, if you're suppressing your own team's information, you're not doing something super helpful. So you want to be sort of careful with that, but I think in the format of this podcast, there's just not much we can say about Alchemist.
Yeah.
I guess, we can say is, you want to do things that show you're a good version of that ability. If you're the Serenovus, try to make people mad as their own role, so that, you know, they can continue sharing their information freely. If you're the Witch, tell people who you've cursed. If you're the Psychopath, try to kill people you think are evil. If you're the Alchemist Organ Grinder, stay drunk.
Gross.
Yeah,
I think that's about right. I think, you know, there's some that provide a whole bunch of information to you. You know, I think thinking about Alchemist as an information role that learns a minion that's not in play.
It doesn't even learn that anymore, Milk.
Oh, that's right. It doesn't even learn that anymore. Because it can double up.
It can double up.
So, yeah. So, basically, I don't know. NA sounds right for me. They're all going to be mad at us for punting on this one, Emma.
I don't care if they're mad at us. Like, it's not a character that has an inherent strategic value that can be ranked.
Yeah, I think that's right.
It's not like Philosopher, where you have flexibility with your choices, even, as what you're going to do with it. We talked about with Philosopher and SMV how you have so many different choices you can make as the Philosopher, and different ways you can play those abilities, and, you can... But, the Alchemist doesn't even have that. It just gets an assigned minion ability, and that's that.
And as it turns out, townsfolk having minion roles often tends not to be very good for the good team.
It just doesn't tend to be good for the game's health.
They're not meant.
I'm not saying Alchemist is a character that should be in the bin, but it's, in my mind, a character that's pretty close to that. There's some fun things, Alchemist, haha, fun, but, it's genuinely unfun if an Alchemist assassin kills the demon and ends the game of the night. It's genuinely unfun if, there's an Empath Zero and an Alchemist Goblin and the evil team just has to sort of sit there and shrug when the Alchemist Goblin gets executed.
Yeah.
These aren't really fun interactions, they're just interactions that exist.
There's also some roles that just aren't very interesting, like Mastermind, Scarlet Woman, Mazepolis.
Yeah, Scarlet Woman was more interesting when you learned that the Scarlet Woman was out of play. It's less interesting now that you don't even learn that.
Yeah.
Alchemist Mez is more or less just an extra evil, so not really a townsfolk.
Yeah.
And
even if you're making choices with some of these, like the Psychopath or the Assassin or the Poisoner, the strategic choice is try to hit evils, don't try to hit goods. Shrug.
Yeah.
Ultimately, what does a good pit hag want to do? It wants to turn outsiders into townsfolk.
It wants to turn the demon into not a demon and win the game. Not very fun. This isn't a fun podcast, but, I don't know. Just, wanting to fill some space with the Alchemist, because... I don't fucking like it.
We're not punting on Alchemist. We've talked about it for a whole 2 minutes.
We've talked about it for 6 minutes, gosh.
There you go.
Let's bring up the Al-Sahir. The Al-Sahir is one of the relatively newer townsfolk. Its ability is each day, if you publicly guess what players are minions and which are demons, good wins.
Can I just say... just to start off with here, because I just had a conversation with some folks about Al-Sahir. There are so many things. There are so many demons. There are so many even basic things like the imp that make the Al-Sahir's job so incredible. incredibly disheartening and impossible feeling.
Like, yeah.
Like, an imp can just, like, the imp, the most basic demon, can just star pass, and now you need to guess two demons and a minion instead of one demon and two minions. And, like, that's just the start of, like, the many, many complicated problems that Alsihir has, because you're basically guessing in the dark with very little feedback.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, the big thing with Alsihir is sort of, like, almost ignore the good wins part of your ability. Like, it's interesting if it happens. It's fun if it happens. Well, I don't even know if it's particularly fun if it happens. But, like, focus on... Treat the Alsihir like it's an information roll, right? Every time you make a guess, you rule out a world.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if you guess X is demon, Y is minion, Z is minion, you've ruled out that world, which is important, even if that happens to be the whole evil team, because Z is the original starting demon who star passed to X.
Mm-hmm.
And you would have won if you had gotten the two demons, one minion world. Like, it's the... You're ruling out five unique worlds over a five-day game, right? Six over a six-day game, assuming you survive.
And that's not nothing.
It's far from nothing. It can be very powerful. I like Alsihir particularly on Leviathan scripts as sort of part of the logic puzzle that Leviathan sort of builds itself to.
I agree with that. No idea
if Alsihir is a Leviathan character in TPI's mind, but in my mind it goes very well with Leviathan, because getting those 5 days of information and ruling out those five worlds feels really powerful in a Leviathan game particularly.
That's actually the world where I think it feels the most useful and strategic, because in many other worlds, some of that information is going to end up ruled out by people dying, and some of that information is going to maybe not be gotten because the Alsihir died. In Leviathan games, where the Alsihir is very likely to make it to the end of the game, they really do get to do that sort of reductive approach to eliminating worlds that isn't always as useful in a game with a demon that kills at night. I do think that approach to Alsihir, of thinking about it as like, okay, eliminating worlds, is interesting. I just think it's more interesting the less the demon kills.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, like, the strategy to Alsihir is similar to other, like, day characters. You want to wait as late in the day as possible. I think that Alsihir guesses at the start of nominations are pretty silly. Particularly, you want to know who's being executed before you make your guess. And that's because there's no real point to guessing worlds where the person being executed is the demon, right?
Exactly.
So you want to know who town is going to execute before you make your guess. So I think there is some sort of like that timing of the day aspect we talked with, like, gossip about and juggler. You want to maximize the information you're going to have to make use of your ability. I would wait till as late in the day as possible to make an Alsihir guess.
I'm inclined to think that it lives somewhere in the C, B range. I don't think it's quite as high as B. I think it's in the much closer to C.
Oh, I think it's in B easily for me. Like, okay, compared to what we have in B, I might even make a case for A.
Again, I don't have to be fair, I don't have the things that we have in each tier in front of me. You have the full tier list. I'm just looking at the one without. So I don't know what I can compare it to in B, but
so B's right now is Clockmaker, Investigator, Chef, Fortune Teller, Oracle, Chambermaid, Exorcist, and Tea Lady. And I think Alsihir just outclasses each of those in the strategy.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think it fits much nicer with Empath, Librarian, Washerwoman, Slayer, Mayor, Dreamer, Cult Leader, Mathematician, Savant, Seamstress, Juggler, Grandmother.
All right, let's put it in B then. That seems...
No, that was A.
Yeah,
I think it goes in A. I don't think it's a B tier at all. I certainly don't think it's C with, like, a bunch of characters and that, like, are pretty passive in one note.
Interesting. I'll have to think about that one more. I haven't thought about Alsihir that much, and I'm quite low on Alsihir, I think, compared to you, because I find the information is difficult to communicate and parse. I don't think people track it as well. That might not have to do with the character. That might have more to do with how people interact with the character. But
yeah, I think people don't treat Alsahir like an information role enough. They don't pay it. Like, it's similar to gossip in the sense that, like, once you, as a town, know who the gossip is, you should be paying close attention to their gossips to try to close worlds. And I think it's similar for the Alsahir.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I would put the Alsahir in A. If you think it's a C-tier character, we can put it in B and debate about it later.
But yeah, it might be one I want to come back to, because I want to think about this one a bit more. I think that one of the problems with it is that I find often in games that I've encountered it in, you get toward, you know, day four of the game, and everybody asks the Alsahir for their guesses because they haven't been paying attention. And then the Alsahir's like, oh yeah, I guessed all these things. And then nobody really listens. And then it sort of feels a lot like a late game Savant where the information is quite good. So I'd want to put it where we put Savant, I think. The information
that's
is quite
A.
good. Great. Let's put it in A.
All right.
Because the information is quite good. And the strategy. Yeah, you win. And the strategy for picking, I agree, is interesting. But I do think people need to pay more attention.
All right, next up is the Amnesiac. You do not know what your ability is. Each day, privately guess what it is. You learn how accurate you are.
Are we just punting this into the NA bucket again? Because, like, I don't know.
I don't think. I actually think we can talk about Amnesiac strategy a little bit.
There's certainly a guessing strategy, right? Like, there's some elements of strategy to the guessing, but we can't speak to a specific ability. But we can talk a little bit about how you might interact with your ability as you discover whether it's passive or whether you learn something on the first night or whether you learn something each night star or whatever. I think there's something I guess we can talk about.
Yeah, I think we can talk about the guessing element because I think there's strategy to the guessing element. And a lot of this is just like best practices. If you don't wake up night one, you don't have to ask if you're an each night star character because you'll learn if you're an each night star character when and if you wake up night two, right?
You also don't need to ask if you're a passive character, because if you have a passive ability, you can just guess that ability. You don't need to waste a guess on asking if it's passive. Just guess the ability. Yeah. Don't worry about when it happens.
Yeah, just sort of like think about what a passive ability might do. Maybe it's like a passive protection effect. Like, so ask if you have a protection effect. You can get to the passivity later. You have a limited number of guesses. Like, use it on things that are going to help you narrow your worlds, not things that are going to become obvious. If you're passive, you'll learn that because you never wake up to do anything. And, rather than asking for your Amnesiac question, like, if you get day information, you can go to the storyteller and be like, give me my day information. And if you get day information, the storyteller will have to tell you. That won't be your Amnesiac question. That's that. Like, there's ways you can do all, like, test out all these avenues without wasting your question on it.
Yeah, and don't forget, you know, characters can be categorized in some ways that may be helpful for you when you're asking questions, right? Do I have a protection ability? Do I have a detection ability? Do I have an information ability? Do things happen to me in the night? Do things happen to me in the day? Like, there are some ways you can narrow it down if you're really, really lost and nothing's happening or limited amounts of things are happening. Do I have to do something actively? Do I have to choose a player? Do I have to, you know, you can ask those things. You can also just try doing some things if you're concerned. Like, you can publicly pick a player. That's often, like, a meme for Amnesiacs, but there's nothing that says your ability isn't the one that does that.
Yeah, that's similar, like, if you think you might be getting information of the day, go demand your day information without asking your question. Yeah. And then ask your question later.
Yeah, exactly.
But again, like, you know, I think, like, there's not much to it. You just have to, like, you know, there's, like, a rhythm to Clock Tower characters. Clock Tower characters wake up every night. Unless they're, like, Clock Tower characters that wake up each night, wake up the first night unless there's a specific reason for them not to. And the characters that have a specific reason not to are those which protect or kill, basically, right?
There's some detection related to things that happen in town, also.
Flower Girl.
Homework roles.
Yeah, the Flower Girl and Town Crier. Like, where there's nothing for them to learn, Undertaker or Cannibal, where there's nothing for them to learn night one, because nothing has happened yet. So, like, you know, if you are waking up on the second night and choosing a player, that suggests you might be in some sort of protection role capability, right? Yep. If you're waking up on the first night and choosing a player, that suggests you're probably some sort of information role of some sort. So you just have to sort of think about the pattern of Clock Tower characters.
I would also suggest that you think about the Amnesiac's asking questions ability, similar in a way to some of the craft your own information roles, like gossip or artist, in that you get to ask whatever question you want, or you get to make whatever guess about your ability that you want, and you can make it as specific or non-specific as you want. So think about the value of specificity in what you're asking each day. It may be that you want to ask more general questions sometimes, but once you kind of have a general category, you may want to ask more specific questions. Alternately, if you don't wake up on the first night, you know your ability's probably in like a protection or killing related or voting and noms related area, and in those cases, maybe you ask something more specific because you know kind of what has been eliminated and what could be what you're getting information on. So try to think about that craft your own information aspect of Amnesiac, because I do think that leads into the strategy of figuring out. Like, I guess the ability of Amnesiac is figure out your ability, right? So if we think about it in that way, I think that does give it some strategy in terms of the question guessing game.
I would ultimately place this in B tier just because the actual ability is going to be so variable that it's hard for me to say it's A tier. But I do think there's some strategic inference there. I think it ends up being similar to other sort of fortune teller and chambermaid in terms of strategy.
I think that sounds about right to me.
Okay.
Here we go.
Next up is the Atheist. The Atheist's ability is the storyteller can break the game rules and, if executed, good wins, even if you are dead, brackets, no evil characters.
I have a thought about how to approach this one.
Mm-hmm.
Because ultimately, the storyteller breaking the game rules doesn't have a ton to do with the Atheist strategy. It has a bit to do with it. But I think maybe a good starting point to think about Atheist is how we talked about Mayor when we were talking about the TV roles. Because ultimately, it's an alternate win condition that you, instead of hope that you'll get fulfilled, it's that you really, really need to get fulfilled. And so a big part of the strategy of Atheist is convincing people that you're the Atheist.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the starting point for my thoughts on it. And then a bunch of stuff is going to happen, and some of it might be weird and silly, and some of it might just be the storyteller really trying to sell a very specific world. You're probably going to get executed, and so you're going to have to do a lot of work while dead. Do you have a different take? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's... Yeah, I mean, yes, more or less. Like... Absent some conditions with, like, drunk or marionette on the script, which some people like, I'm not a huge fan of, but other people really think it's fun to make atheists drunk or the marionette. The atheist's ability is they start knowing the solution to the game, right? The solution to the game is execute the storyteller. And... like... Your job is to convince the rest of the town about the solution you already know. And there's different ways you can go about it. You can obviously just claim atheist immediately and get yourself executed, which is sort of the so-called standard atheist play and why some people don't think it's fun. But, like, you can also, like, sort of... There's other things you can do. You can sort of... You can encourage the storytellers to break the rule. That's another thing that an atheist can do. In a way, they can start getting you to be able to signal to other good players that something is up.
Yeah, and I think that's where a lot of the fun of atheist can come from as well, is like trying to bait the storyteller into breaking the rules in some way. I don't think just like calling them a coward and threatening them to kill you is necessarily the top approach. Could be one you try. But another way you could think about it is, can you sell a world where the storyteller is doing things that, or the storyteller is encouraged to do things to sort of make that non-atheist world seem true? And can you get them to do more and more outrageous things?
Yeah.
I also agree with you. I actually do find atheists fun in the right conditions. But I don't think it's as much fun when paired with Drunk or Marionette. Because that ability to sort of know how the game's going to turn out is... It can be quite a lot of fun, but it's... I think the idea that it can be Drunk or be the Marionette leads to some odd play patterns, and I think Atheist is sort of already suspicious enough on its own that attaching it to Drunk or Marionette isn't necessary.
Yeah. I do think it goes sort of in a lower strategy group at the end of the day, though, C or D tier.
Yeah.
Because you're sort of...
fit around soldier-ish area.
That we have in C tier, and I think Atheist, yeah, I think it goes someplace similar. All right, we're making good progress here. No, we're not, but we can pretend. Next up is the Balloonist. The Balloonist's ability is, each night you learn a player of a different character type than last night, square brackets, plus zero or one outsider. What you think, Milk?
So I think there's some confusion around Balloonist because it used to be a minion demon detector kind of character, and now it's a meta information character that's, I think, a little bit more like High Priestess in general than it is like Fortune Teller and Dreamer. And I think...
I disagree with that take entirely.
Oh, great. Well, I'm glad we finally disagree on something. It's been a long time since we have, so it's good that we can disagree on this. I think in some of the scripts that it used to be present on, I don't think it fits the role that those scripts have for it. And so it often ends up being in a weird place. But you seem to have a different view on it, so what do you think?
Oh, I think this is barely a change to Balloonist.
Fascinating.
I think it's an extremely minimal change that people have hyperventilated over and made more than it is. It does the exact same things as Balloonist has always done. Balloonist has always told you that two characters you see in a row are of different character types. Balloonist still tells you that. What Balloonist doesn't do anymore is do oppressive world narrowing when it gets its full set of information, or like mechanically confirm itself by the presence of outsiders who shouldn't be there. But it's still the same basic idea of, I learn a player one night, I learn a player the next night, they are of different character types. That is always what the Balloonist has done. That's always been the important thing the Balloonist has done, and it's what it still does. I think this is essentially the exact same character, just tweaked a little bit to make it more easy to use on scripts, which I think it is. So, that's just my take on the new Balloonist stuff. I think it's barely a change. I think people have made it out to be this huge change when it is, in fact, the exact same character. In fact, I think most of the time the Balloonist learns the exact same information. Like, when I run Balloonist, I almost always give one townsfolk, one outsider, one minion, one demon in the first four pings. It's just, it gives the evil team the plausible deniability that that's not what happened.
Now, fair enough. That seems reasonably convincing. I do think that something that you glossed over, which I do think is important, though, is that change of it not being one townsfolk, one outsider, one minion, one demon, even if you're inclined as a storyteller to give that, I do think that does change how much the Balloonist is reliant on other characters, which is a good change. I'm not saying it's a bad change. But previously, it was going to be able to, in some sense, solo solve a game because of that one minion, one demon, one townsfolk, one outsider requirement. I think that change, which has made the character better, means that it's going to have to interact with other characters' information as it should.
Yeah, I mean, the Balloonist's now job is to sort of you know, lock in. What you want to see is the blueness is two townsfolk claims in rule, because then you know one is full of shit.
Yep. You don't know what that means, but you know one's full of shit.
Well, it means that one of them is evil, almost certainly, right?
It might mean one of them is an outsider who's bluffing townsfolk.
Yeah, but, like, you know, that's going to be due to the presence of things like drunk or damsel or Vengu. But barring those three things, like, see two townsfolk claims in a row, one of them is full of shit and probably evil. And then you just have to figure out which one is full of shit and probably evil.
Alright. There's not much choice happening with the character.
Yeah, there's not much choice. I think it's similar to sort of our other, like, investigatory roles, like the clockmaker, investigator, and chef, where
those are in B,
you need to sort of, yeah, talk, yeah, I think B tier, where you sort of need to spend a lot of time talking to people and figuring things out from conversations and piecing together your piece as a small part of the puzzle.
All right, I'm happy to put it in B. Regardless of our disagreement.
All right, next up is the Banshee. The Banshee's ability is, if the demon kills you, all players learn this from now on. You may nominate twice per day and vote twice per nomination. You know, Milk, when we talked with the minstrel, we talked about how the minstrel is a win more character and that it doesn't really, you know, like, the minstrel triggers when good is already ahead and just makes them more ahead. The Banshee is sort of the exact opposite of that. The Banshee is a lose-less character. The Banshee is a character who enables good the ability, gives good the ability to win games they have no business winning.
Yeah, it's a swing character, right?
So, and I think, like, you know, thinking about the Banshee that way, that's how I think about the Banshee, and I think, like, it sort of changes, like, that look of how you play it versus how you play other bait rules, or at least how I approach it, which is, as the Banshee, unlike as the Raven Keeper or the Sage or the Farmer, I have absolutely no interest in trying to bait a kill from the demon by bluffing something else. I don't care if the demon kills me or not as the Banshee. If they kill me, great. I have my ability to vote to nominate on final three, which is what I care about. And if they don't kill me, I have my ability to vote and nominate freely on final three. The demon loses both ways. So, like, I think, like, Banshee is a much more, should be a much more face-up character than people think it should be. It should basically be just, like, you know, claim you're the Banshee. Be honest about it. Be truthful and honest. Make yourself too good to execute. And let the demon decide what they're going to do with that. Because they can't get around you.
No.
Or, I mean, they can, like, you can be poisoned or something sad, but
there's a problem with that, of course, and we've talked about this in previous tier lists. That works great until you encounter the group of people who don't understand what you're doing and want to kill you, because why would a Banshee can't claim publicly, right? So
you're gonna have to
do some meta fixing, y'all. You're gonna have to get out there and claim Banshee publicly a whole bunch so that people understand that it's a good thing. It's a good thing to claim Banshee. What's the demon going to do about it? Right?
Kill you?
Kill
yeah.
You?
Oh. You don't care. I literally don't care if I die or not as the Banshee.
What are they going to do?
Like,
you?
Oh, my job is to be the good nominator in final three. Like, the big risk to me is I get executed. So I want to do things that minimize my chance of getting executed, which are lying increases my chance of being executed. Mm-hmm. Getting in double claims increases my chance of being executed.
Yeah, don't do that.
Being shifty increases my chance of being executed. All those things I don't really want to do as the Banshee. I just want to get killed.
That's right. Preferably by the demon. Well, no, specifically by the demon, or you want to live.
Yeah.
And the best way to live during the day, which is the time that's most dangerous for you as the Banshee, is getting killed by town, which means that you want to avoid getting killed by town. So be honest. Don't just sit there passively. Go talk to people. Go share information that you've learned. Go help people solve the game. That'll get people to trust you and be on your side.
Once you've triggered it as the Banshee, which you've done because you've been so trusted the demon's forced to kill you even though they know you're the Banshee, you do have to think about, like, using your nominations and votes, and I get really sad whenever I see Banshees not voting. When their ability is active.
It's free votes, y'all.
It's free votes. It's votes like... Use your voice, I guess, is what I'm saying. I don't know.
Here's the thing. There's a convention in Clock Tower not to overvote. But if you're a dead banshee and you've got a bunch of extra votes and you believe that someone is evil, put your votes up. Like, vote. Use your power to get evils killed. Don't let evils sit there and maybe have the ability to tie the game or whatever. Like, if you believe in your world, if you believe in the world that the person you're voting on is evil, you got those two free votes every day. Get them out there.
Yeah, like, you are saving dead votes when you vote, right? Because...
Yeah. I mean, you're right. You're right on it, Em.
Anyway, where do we think we put this milk?
I don't think there's that much interactivity, and it doesn't have any press your luck, and it's missing a lot of the elements that we look for. I think I might want to put it in C tier.
Yeah, like, I'm fine putting it in C tier.
It's a lot like one of the play patterns we talked about for Soldier. Just go be the soldier. Be the best soldier you can be.
Yeah, the Banshee and the Soldier are very similar. In fact, there's basically no difference except for the Banshee is a little bit funnier. they both, like, are just there as a bulwark against good losing, which is really powerful. But, like, it does sort of, I think, lead you into a more, like, a play pattern that I think these characters sometimes don't get to. Anyway. Mm-hmm. Next up is the Bounty Hunter.
Oh, Bounty Hunter.
The Bounty Hunter's ability is you start knowing one evil player. If the player you know dies, you learn another evil player tonight. One townsfolk is evil in square brackets.
My experience of Bounty Hunter is somewhat different. My understanding of the Bounty Hunter's ability is you start the game poisoned.
I mean, like, the ability is simply too strong for not to be, to be on scripts without significant reasons for its ability to be, its information to be wrong.
Yep.
Being passively told the entire evil team one by one is, I mean, there's a reason why it adds a whole extra evil, which is that the ability is busted.
The cost of the ability adding an entire evil is also kind of busted. So it's quite problematic to talk about Bounty Hunter because it's hard to balance it in any sort of world. It's super strong. Your job as the Bounty Hunter is to get town to, as quickly as possible, kill the people you see.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what else there is to say about it, Emma.
Yeah, I think it's pretty straightforward. I think it's probably C or D tier just sort of how direct it should play.
I think it's just in D tier, right? It's like, see a thing kill... Didn't you just say this in a game that we played where you pulled Bounty Hunter? Like, see thing, kill thing.
Like, yeah. You just see thing and you can kill thing.
Yeah, it goes in D tier. Not much to say about it.
Next up is the Cannibal. The Cannibal's ability is you have the ability of the recently killed executee. If they are evil, you are poisoned until a good player dies by execution.
It's not the Undertaker.
Yeah, it's a spicy Undertaker. It's a spicy Undertaker where, like, in exchange for maybe not getting to directly confirm a player, because things can have matching patterns to the Cannibal, you get an extra use of that player's ability. Yeah,
and it does get poisoned when evil players... get killed, so it'll get some false information natively. Yeah. So that
unlike the Undertaker, like
math, you know.
Yeah, unlike the Undertaker, it doesn't learn when an evil player is dead. The evil player's bluff normally gets fed to the Cannibal, and the Cannibal gets stuff. I think it's pretty similar to the Undertaker or the Pacifist, where you just want to execute people early. You don't really care if they're good or evil. If you get a duplicate ability, great. If you get poisoned, great. You don't really care. You just want to make sure you're fed every day.
Something funny about the cannibal that I've strangely encountered a bunch of times recently is that if it eats a good minion, it gets that minion's it gets that good minion ability. I don't know why that I've encountered that multiple times recently, but it just is a thing. So remember that it's not if it eats a minion ability, it's if it eats an evil character. Similarly, if it eats an evil townsfolk from a bounty hunter or a mess turn player or something like that, it also gets poison information.
Yeah. Which is a nice sort of inbuilt spirit of ivory. Like, you know, goons and ogres and cult leaders can't cause cannibals to create two extra evils.
Yeah, it's a pretty well-designed character, I think.
Yeah, I really like the character. I do think it's sort of C-tier in terms of strategy.
Yeah, it's pretty passive. Try to get people killed. Eat them, see what happens.
Yeah. Okay, next up is the cult leader. The cult leader's ability is, each night you become the alignment of an alive neighbor. If all good players choose to join your cult, your team wins.
I think we jokingly used to call this shitty empath. It's
okay.
It's weird. It's a weird character because it's an alignment flipper, and so it's going to have some weird things getting onto, you know, onto scripts in terms of like what it sees. But something interesting about it is, unlike the empath who gets numbers, which are just going to clearly be false if they're, you know, if they're drunk or poisoned or something, the cult leader will turn alignments if they're next to someone, and if they're drunk or poisoned, they're not going to turn alignments. So they will know when they're next to an evil for sure. Just from the information aspect of the cult leader's ability. Forming a cult part of the ability, I don't know what the strategy of that is, get people to believe that you're good and the cult leader. It's hard.
Yeah, it's basically you want people to believe you're good, even when you're evil.
Yeah. There's plenty of people in the community that will just never vote on a cult, and I don't think that's...
It's not fun, and it's bad strategy.
Yeah.
The goal of the cult calls, like the goal of all of these sort of alternative win conditions, is not to win the game. It's to gain information from the operation of the ability.
Yep.
Like, the goal of a cult leader should... The goal... When you're playing in a cult leader game, when someone's calling for cults, like, you want two or three different people every day to not vote on the cult. And then that gives you information that among those two and three three people, at least one of them is good. Like... That's useful information for the good team. If there's, like, some jerk who just, as a policy, refuses to raise their hand for cults, it's not that you're preventing the win condition, it's that you're spiking the cult leader's townsfolk information for your own selfish play.
Yeah.
And I will call that out. And if you're that sort of player who refuses to join cults on principle, you are making the game worse. I will be upfront about my belief in that, and I will say, and I will call you out like that. Like, one or two people a day don't join the cult. Let the cult leader get information. Don't always spike their information by refusing to ever join cults. Don't be a dick.
Like, I think it's a misunderstanding or it's a misrepresentation of what the cult leader actually does. The turning alignments thing is cost for the ability to narrow down who evil is in a way similar to Al-Sahir through reduction. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. And getting people to put up their hands and getting people like actually saying like, hey, could you not put up your hands today? Like that's a way to get reductive information.
Yeah. I think a lot of the strategy is, you know, figuring out how to sort of convince people to not join your cult to gain your information. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's at least interesting, but it's also very social. And so it's a very tricky thing where it's hard to evaluate just because it's like, how do you convince someone who just absolutely refuses to vote on cults, hey, will you vote today? Because I've got these other people Like, you may have to do some bargaining and say, like, hey, who do you trust? We'll have them not put up their hand today so that you can put up your hand today, or something like that. You've got
to
find someone.
Or just tell them to stop being a dick.
I mean, you can do that, too.
That's my sort of reaction to that, is you're being a dick, stop being a dick. Anyway, I think the cult leader is annoying. The cult leader, I think, isn't frequently very fun, but I think it is a very strategically deep character, so I'm going to push for it to be an A tier.
A tier was what I was thinking, too. It's very much like Elsa here. It's just a sort of different approach.
Yeah. Next up is the engineer. The engineer's ability is once per game at night to choose which minions or which demon is in play. So the engineer is sort of a pick your own evil team situation, right?
Yeah, and often I've recently seen it on scripts with other pick the evil team roles, like Ghazali and Hatter.
I think it works nicely with Hatter because it gives evil counterplay to the engineer they don't otherwise have.
I agree.
I don't think it works nice with Ghazali because I think, like, making the demon a Ghazali is just always too powerful.
Yeah, and also the engineer is usually going to make the thing that the player perceives as the weakest on the script.
Yeah.
So that's the thing without some additional. So in a Ghazali, if the Ghazali's on the script, that's the thing that that's always going to be the demon that the engineer picks to make, because it doesn't have secondary abilities, it doesn't have poisoning, or it doesn't have like
abilities. Yeah, the engineer is another character that's incredibly hard to script fill for, because you can't have sort of any characters whose ability is front loaded information is front loaded. So like Baron, Marionette, Ghazali, Lord of Typhon. To a degree, Godfather. All characters that just work incredibly poorly with the engineer. On the other hand, you also can't have characters that let the engineer confirm themselves. Or, like, you can, but it sort of can be unfun. So, like, Al-Hadikia, Fearmonger, Vizier, Psychopath are all sort of rough. Organ Grinder are all sort of rough engineer experiments because they let the engineer become confirmed. It's very hard to script build for, but that's not really what we're here to talk about.
No.
Like
the script building comment is important, because if the engineer looks on the script and it sees I perceive that these two things are weaker or more confirmable or like just obviously the best choice, it's always going to make that choice. So you need it needs to have a more difficult choice to make amongst the available options to force the engineer to be interesting. Generally, the strategy is going to be pick the things that impact your team the least.
Yeah. Or pick the things that if they come into play after setup are bad for the evil team, like Baron. If, like, there's no Baron at setup, but then you turn the Poisoner into the Baron is just a minion without an ability. So the engineer is almost always going to do that, which is, it's not fun, but it's what's going to happen. I don't know. Like, I think on, like, a well-balanced engineer script where the engineer can't confirm themselves in making their changes and doesn't have obvious choices, it's a pretty interesting character. I just am not sure I've ever seen a Clock Tower script that actually meets the conditions that make engineer interesting.
I think we're a minion or two short of the conditions that make engineer interesting enough.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some minions that we would need that balance out the power level. Like, I think if you've got a choice between Pit Hag and Poisoner, that's a harder choice. And maybe we just need one or two things, like Pit Hag, Poisoner, Wizard. Like, there's some things that maybe they have roughly equivalent perceived power level. Not that they are more or less powerful, but that they have sort of equivalent perceived power level that makes a harder choice for the engineer. But I agree with you. I don't know that script exists.
Yeah, so I almost want to NA the engineer after all this discussion, because it's so just dependent on what minions and demons are on the script, and I don't know. But I think I could be convinced to put it in C or B if you have a strong argument.
I think it reminds me a lot of Courtier, in that mm-hmm. when we talked about Cordier, we talked about how it has like a very predominant play pattern. I think Engineer is like that in that it has a, it's a once per game, it has some push your luck, but ultimately it has a very predominant play pattern, which is pick the, you know, step one, is there something that confirms me as the Engineer? Pick that. Step two, is there something that's just objectively worse for the evil team than anything else that's in play or makes them have not an ability? Pick that. And so I would be inclined to think of it as a Cordier analog in a way. But I would be happy to just NA it as well. I think we do have some, because we did the base threes first, we have some sort of history that we could lean to sort of say it's a little bit like Cordier.
Mm-hmm.
I'll leave it up to you.
Yeah, well, it doesn't matter to me. I'm happy to put it in B or C. If you, let's put it with Cordier and C.
Let's put that it with Cordier and C.
Yeah, then in NAing it.
Yeah, I don't want to. I don't want to just like as a habit not like say, oh, it doesn't fit. Alchemist at least it has too many things to fit. Like it has too many options. This I think it has a predominant play pattern.
We have three more characters we're gonna try to get through tonight. So first of those three is the Farmer. The Farmer's ability is when you die a knight, an alive good player becomes a farmer.
Yep.
It's
similar to a lot of things we've already talked about in terms of the Demon Banes.
Yeah. I will say, like, I have solved games multiple times as the Farmer,
mm-hmm.
using the Farmer ability, in ways I haven't, like, done as well with the other Demon Banes. Once, I confirmed that the Golem had been Fangu jumped when the Farmer passed to someone else, and once I killed the Ahadikia.
That's a great one. I also want to point out that I think people don't realize the information that you get when a farmer passes, because you get a big piece of information based off of who gets the
mm-hmm.
pass. Not off of the fact that they're confirmed. What were they before, and why didn't the pass go to somebody else? There's a bunch of information in that choice from the storyteller of where the farmer pass goes that most people don't think about. That's something, another layer to farmer that you need to look at. Okay, the farmer got caught by the chambermaid. That's weird, considering there's a clockmaker over there. Why did the chambermaid catch it instead of the clockmaker? That clockmaker seems awful suspicious not catching the farmer pass. Things like that.
Yeah, I mean, but, like, I wouldn't necessarily say, like, someone is suspicious for not catching a farmer pass. Like, the storyteller ultimately has to balance the game. If, like, confirming the clockmaker is too powerful for the good team, the clockmaker, you're going to look to put the farmer somewhere else.
Sure. I'm just saying that there's more information there that I grabbed very general. I just looked at the first two tokens that were in front of me. But, like, it is worth thinking about why a certain player got the pass, why a certain player didn't get the pass, like, what's confirmatory about in their information, what the storyteller's trying not to confirm. There's a lot to it.
Yeah, if the Al-Hadikia knows, if you know that the Al-Hadikia knows you're the farmer for whatever reason, because, like, say you've already caught a farmer pass, you can just pick to live, because they might be trying to smuggle themselves in there with you, and then you can murder them.
Oh, yeah. I like that a lot. I do remember that game. So Farmer probably lives right around the same space as those other Demon Banes, though. Maybe a little step up because the confirmation is quite strong.
Yeah, so here's the thing. We have the Sage, Soldier, and Banshee down in C tier. We have the Raven Keeper in S tier. I think the Farmer goes in A tier.
I think it does too. There's quite a lot of strategy in thinking to think about how to use it, the social interaction with the person who catches it, the questions about what roles they had, what information they had, like why is that being confirmed, etc.
I think that's something that differentiates the Raven Keeper and the Farmer from the Soldier, the Sage, and the Banshee is the Raven Keeper and Farmer actually care about dying at night. The Soldier, Sage, and Banshee only think they do. Like, the Banshee and the Sage gain the same thing from being alive in Final Three that they do from being dead in Final Three. The Sage learns that the Demon is one of two players if they're alive in Final Three. The Banshee can nomination vote if they're alive in Final Three. The farmer is more like the Raven Keeper, that it actually cares about being dying tonight. You don't want to be so trusted that... or, like, if you want to be so trusted that the demon has to kill you, you want that to happen late in the game, like the Raven Keeper. Mm-hmm. But you also want the demon to kill you early. Like, this is, I think, the key distinction between these high-strategy demon banes and the low-strategy demon banes, is the ones that actually care about dying, that they don't get a special effect, that getting attacked doesn't really actually provide them a bonus to what their ability already does, are the ones that have high strategy. The ones that legitimately don't care about dying, they only think they care about dying, like the Banshee, the Sage, and the Soldier, are low strategy. The ones that actually care about dying are high strategy, in my mind.
Yeah, the other thing about the farmer that puts it up there is the fact that it can happen multiple times, and every time it happens, you gain another layer of information, and there's another sort of step in your, like, in your conversation and in your interactions. And so, like, that layered interaction, I think, also creates a higher strategy level for the farmer than the other ones that I agree don't really care if they die. They can just claim their roles.
Yeah. All right, next up, we have once per game during the day, visit the storyteller for some advice to help your team win. That's right, it's the fisherman. One of the best experimental townsfolks. I think we haven't had an S-tier experimental townsfolk yet. I think that's about to change, at least in my mind, because we've found it. It's the fisherman.
We did put Acrobat in S-tier, but I agree with you.
Oh, we did put Acrobat in S-tier. We haven't found a second one yet, but now we have.
The fisherman. It's the fisherman, absolutely. And it's the fisherman for a whole bunch of reasons. Go ahead, Emma.
Yeah, the fisherman is a push-your-luck character. The later the game, the more useful your information is probably going to be. It's a character that then has to think about their information, because the fisherman doesn't get direct information. They get advice that they're supposed to figure out how to action. I love the fisherman. I don't have much more to say about it. It's just like a sort of perfect encapsulation in my mind of an S-tier character.
I think it's my favorite of the push-your-luck characters. Like, obviously Philo is, you know, it has that extra level of the you know, being able to be anything that's on the script anyway. But, like, Fisherman, that advice, like, getting advice from the storyteller is just, like, it's fantastic. And, like, it fills a gap in information. So if you feel like there's something that town is missing, you can go get your information. If town is, like, at kind of a dead end, or you feel like the evil team's getting ready to pull ahead, you can get somebody on the block and then go get your advice and see if what the storyteller says about, like, the current situation of the game with somebody on the block. Like, there's a lot of things that the fisherman can get information about, and you can sort of structure when in the day you go and get your information or when in the day you ask, like we've talked about with some of the craft your own information roles, to sort of see if you can get the storyteller to give you different types of information. And I think that's really fantastic. So I think Fisherman goes right in S. I agree with Emma. It's great. It's very strategic. Lots of choices to make. How long do you hold it? When do you use it? What circumstances do you use it in?
How do you figure out how to follow the advice? Oh, it's just such a perfect character.
It's a beautiful character. It's lovely.
All right. And our final character for this edition is going to be the General. The General's ability is, each night you learn which alignment the storyteller believes is winning, good, evil, and neither.
I've talked a lot in this one, and I'm very curious about your opinion about General, because I think most people know that I think quite a lot of General, and I think quite a lot of roles that require you to go and get other people's information to try to sort out your own information.
Yeah, I think General's interesting. You know, General is... I'm personally not as enamored with the General as some other people. I think it's a fine character, but I don't think it's a particularly good one. I think the General sort of... The General needs to pay attention to a lot of what's going on in town. the way a good storyteller should be deciding who's winning is by looking at a holistic approach to literally everything that's going on. That's how many players of each team are alive. Who is the town suspicious of, and who are they likely to execute tomorrow? What actual characters are still alive? You know, a town's where if the team, like, are these characters sober? Like, there's just so many elements that are going into this that the general needs to also be trying to track all of those things. The general is a character I also think that's sort of hurt by the online format, because the online format is much more focused on private whispering and much less focused on public, what's being discussed publicly, than in-person games. And that's a real drawback for the general, because while the storyteller can go still walk around and listen in on a bunch of different private conversations, it's much harder for the general to do that. So the more conversation that's pushed off into private discussion, the less the general has to make sense of their ability.
You solved an in-person game we played once at, I think it was at Origins, where I snake-charmed Leviathan. And you, as I recall, used general information to determine that that had happened.
Yeah, I just nominated you every day and said, I think that if we nominate Milk, the storyteller will have to tell me that good is winning because we're trying to kill the demon. And then every night the storyteller gave me a bigger thumbs up.
It did work.
Yeah, I mean, I already believed that you had snake charmed the demon.
Well, of course. But when your information backed it up, right, that's on the, like, realm of, like, just because you solved the game, you know, you still have to convince the rest of town that you solved the game. You know, yeah. So it's nice to have your general information as, like, a supporting point for that. But I think that's the core of it. Like, again, much like some of the other roles we've talked about, you have to put yourself in a situation where the storyteller can give you information that you can parse, and then you have to go talk to other people to get their information so that you can figure out what the storyteller might be thinking.
Mm-hmm. That's all fair.
Yeah, I think it's probably a B-tier character strategically for me. Ultimately, it's a bit on the passive investigative side. Their job is mostly going to be to go and talk to other people and see if they can figure out if the game state matches up with what they think. Like a general can get, like, see the big swings in a game, but often, like, the subtleties are harder to pick out. If the storyteller's telling you that the evil team is winning, and you're going into five players alive, then you might be in some trouble. You might need to be worried about the TPK, the whole evil team still being alive. But that's not, like, you're probably already pretty aware of that. You know, if that's a surprise, then your team's in pretty bad shape already. So you need to kind of try to make sure that you're using the general information to not let the game swing that fully evil. If you can.
Mm-hmm.
So B-tier maybe?
Yeah, I think B-tier is nice for the general.
All right, well, that's our set for this week. We've gotten through another pile of them.
14 townsfolk. We have just 15 townsfolk left. We've done all the non-travelers. I don't think we're doing the travelers. Well, we haven't done all the non-travelers because there's some minions and...
We'll have
mostly
to
minions.
Catch back up on Zahn and Wizard and...
Zahn and Wizard, I think they're the two. We did put Boffin somewhere.
We did put Boffin in. Yeah, we did manage to put Boffin in. It came out right when we did it. Right when we were doing that minion tier list.
So and the other really since then was Gnome.
Yeah, and then Gnome was the other.
I think we're not doing Travelers.
Yeah, well, we'll kind of see what else we've got on the docket. I think there's some other things we want to do as we're going forward, so we'll see if we have time for it. So just to recap this one, S tier is going to be Acrobat and Fisherman. A tier is the Alsahir, the Cult Leader, and the Farmer. B tier, you got your Amnesiac, your Balloonist, and your General. In C tier, Atheist, Banshee, Cannibal, Engineer, and down in D tier,
the Bounhunter, and then the new not applicable tier, the Alchemist.
That's right, the new not applicable to this sir not appearing in this film. All right. Hey, we've done another chunk. This felt very daunting when we started, Emma, but we've kind of made a meal of it.
Wait, yeah, we're nearly finished. We just have high priestess, huntsman, king, choir boy, knight, lycanthrope, magician, night watchman, noble pixie, poppy girl, preacher, Shigenja steward, and village idiot left.
Yeah, it's hardly anything.
And wizard and Zahn. All right. Until next time, may your scenarios stay grim.
Bye, everybody.